This program is brought to you by the Genesis Communications Network, a world leader in talk radio since 1998. Visit GCNlive.com today.
And now, America's number one show on pop culture and politics. This is the Michael Medved Show.
And another great day in this greatest nation on God's green earth, where one of the great ongoing debates that polarizes the American public involves the proper role of religion in American life. Do people have a right to what some activists have called freedom from religion? There's a big organization, we've had the leaders of it on our radio show, called the Freedom From Religion Foundation. Was that the intention of our founding fathers, to make absolutely sure that no one ever got to hear, for instance, a prayer in a public school, that no one ever got to see a motto on our money that says, "In God we trust"? How did that come into existence in the first place? We're going to be answering all of those questions, the true nature of the role of religion in American society, and yes, the proper role of religion in American government. What did the First Amendment really mean? That's all part of this very special broadcast of The Michael Medved Show, under the title, Is America a Christian Nation? He forgets not his own, the Thanksgiving hymn we gather together. It's a fascinating story behind that hymn as well, which we will also recount. But when you consider the deeply religious nature of General Washington and his leadership of the Revolutionary Army, the Continental Army, the fact that chaplains were instructed to conduct religious service, that so many of the founding fathers thought it was indispensable to victory, to emphasize specifically Christian religion, it's kind of amazing to think that there are people today who insist that, oh, the founding fathers, they weren't religious at all. They wanted to fight against religion. No, that wasn't the point, and it certainly wasn't the point of the First Amendment. The First Amendment came into existence in order to defend unity, not secularism. Now, none of the religious proclamations or the commands by George Washington or by the Continental Congress ever proved in the least bit controversial. There was no 18th century equivalent of the Freedom From Religion Foundation or the Americans United for Separation of Church and State that suddenly popped up at Valley Forge to threaten the commander-in-chief with a nasty lawsuit unless he dropped his habit of ordering his beleaguered troops to fast and pray. Military and political leaders of the revolutionary conflict never expressed a desire to disentangle government or the military from religious associations. If anything, they sought a more fervently, sincerely Christian society, a nation of undefiled religion, in John Witherspoon's phrase, in contrast to the corrupt ways of the mother country. Why, then, the strict avoidance of religious references in the Constitution of the United States? The Declaration of Independence included half dozen mentions of Providence or the Creator, but our Charter of Liberty, the Constitution, some 11 years later, contains only the briefest innocuous identification of the signing date as the year of our Lord, 1787. Today's secularists predictably point to the absence of explicitly Christian content as the surest sign that the founders never meant to establish a religious nation. The Freedom From Religion Foundation offers a brochure entitled, Is America a Christian Nation?, that declares the U.S. Constitution is a secular document. It begins, "We the people," and contains no mention of God or Christianity. Its only reference to religion are exclusionary, such as, "No religious test shall ever be required as a qualification to any office or public trust," that's Article 6, and "Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion or prohibiting free exercise thereof," the First Amendment, end quote. Now, in advancing such arguments, secular activists fail to recognize or at least acknowledge that the framers, with their constitutional approach, meant to protect unity, not secularism. The founders certainly encouraged biblical faith in the broadest sense, but they understood the need to discourage squabbling or discrimination among the various religious denominations to be found within the new nation. The states took pains to continue the cooperation that had prevailed in the Revolution. During the war, Connecticut Congregationalists, Virginia Anglicans, New Jersey Presbyterians, and North Carolina Methodists had all managed to fight side by side and to participate jointly in the divine service ordered by General Washington. Soldiers from New York and Massachusetts had even served uncomplainingly under a Quaker from Rhode Island, the courageous and gifted General Nathanael Greene, despite the fact that their ancestors had ruthlessly persecuted and even executed unwanted Quaker interlopers in the case of Massachusetts. On the battlefield, Americans of every denomination, including a disproportionate number of soldiers in the Continental Army from the tiny Jewish minority, managed to follow the exhortation of Benjamin Franklin's famous Join or Die cartoon, depicting a snake chopped into several regional slices. After the war, then, the states tried to avoid battles over doctrine and practice, but they sustained their determination to encourage Christianity in a more general sense. Weeks before the Constitutional Convention convened in 1787, Congress adopted the Northwest Ordinance, which stated, quote, "Religion, morality, and knowledge being necessary to good government and the happiness of mankind, schools and the means of education shall forever be encouraged." End quote. These words, reenacted by the first Congress under the Constitution, made clear that to the founders, the propagation of religion and morality represented the prime and necessary purpose of schooling. In other words, with the Revolution concluded, the leaders of the struggling new nation didn't suddenly jettison the Christian fervor with which they had won the war. Contrary to claims by today's separationists, they didn't instantly transform themselves into skeptical non-believers who hoped to drive organized faith out of the public square. A proper understanding of the First Amendment reflects the importance of religion to the new republic. The Freedom from Religion Foundation characterizes the First Amendment's Establishment Clause as exclusionary, but the clause actually protected established churches in the states. Listen to this. At the time of the Constitution, the governments of 6 of the 13 states, New Hampshire, Massachusetts, Connecticut, Maryland, South Carolina, and Georgia, endorsed specific denominations and provided public money for church construction and maintenance. With its entry into the Union in 1791, Vermont joined them with yet another established church. In most of the other states, veteran journalist M. Stanton Evans noted of unabashedly Christian America at the time of its founding, there remained a network of religious requirements for public office, reflecting the pervasive, taken-for-granted Christian nature of the people being represented. These requirements usually mandated that a candidate for office had to be a Christian, and in some instances, quite specifically, a Trinitarian, and in numerous cases, a Protestant. In the bargain, Jewish or Catholic candidates for office, you were out of luck. Congressional leaders who debated the First Amendment expressed no intention of interfering with the states that openly promoted and funded religious institutions. In fact, they struggled to find language that would prohibit Congress from legislating either to establish a national religion or to disestablish state religion. According to Louisiana State University law professor John Baker in the indispensable book, The Heritage Guide to the Constitution, even Harvard's Lawrence Tribe, the most esteemed liberal legal scholar of his generation, and now a member of the Obama administration, even Lawrence Tribe has acknowledged a growing body of evidence suggests that the framers principally intended the establishment of religion clause to perform two functions. Number one, to protect state religious establishments from national displacement. And number two, to prevent the national government from aiding some, but not all, religions. In other words, they instituted the Establishment Clause not because they wanted to create or to protect a secular nation, but because they wanted to prevent religious squabbling, religious disagreements, religious divisions from somehow crippling the new national government.
You're listening to a special history broadcast of the Michael Medved Show.
Why be held back by pain and difficulty and soreness and stiffness when Relief Factor is available and available so readily? You have nothing to lose but your pain and the whole world to gain. This is $19.95 for a 3-week quick start, which can reduce the inflammation, it can reduce the pain, it can reduce the soreness and stiffness and make you feel better. Go to michaelmedved.com, click on the banner for Relief Factor, michaelmedved.com, find the banner for Relief Factor. If you're troubled by Washington moving toward more government control, income taxes, rent control, and centralized decision-making, now is the time for you to take action. At Washington Policy Center, we want free market reforms that make Washington the best place to raise a family, to get a job, or to start a business. WPC is nationally renowned for its effectiveness in an ideologically hostile state. Get off the sidelines. Become a member today at WashingtonPolicy.org. That's WashingtonPolicy.org.
Well, just when you thought it couldn't get any better, MyPillow is launching the MyPillow 2.0. Back when MyPillow was invented, it had everything you could want in a pillow. Now, nearly 2 decades later, they've discovered a new technology that makes MyPillow even better. The MyPillow 2.0 has the patented adjustable fill of the original MyPillow, and now with brand new fabric that is made with a temperature-regulating thread. The MyPillow 2.0 is the softest, smoothest, and coolest pillow you'll ever own. Say goodbye to tossing and turning and flipping your pillow over in the middle of the night, and more great news on the MyPillow 2.0, buy one, get one free with promo code MEDVED. MyPillow 2.0 with its temperature regulating technology is 100% made in the USA and comes with a 10-year warranty and a 60-day money-back guarantee. Just go to MyPillow.com and click on the radio podcast square to receive the MyPillow 2.0 buy one, get one free offer. Just when you thought MyPillow couldn't get any better, MyPillow 2.0 gives you the best pillow ever. Enter promo code MEDVED at MyPillow.com to get your MyPillow 2.0s today.
No other network provides the level of customer service we do. When it comes to radio advertising, we are your one-stop shop. And no matter how big or small your business is, we can help. Email us at advertise@gcnlive.com and an experienced advertising executive will help you take the first step towards driving more customers to your business or website. Advertise@gcnlive.com. Easy, affordable, effective.
I had no idea it would destroy my life, but before it happened, I had a successful business in Austin, Texas. Everyone laughed at me when I shut that business down, but I could not ignore the wake-up call. I was volunteering on a project to get locally grown food into a school. That project was a complete failure, and I discovered that there were few local farmers. There's only 4 days worth of food in the grocery stores, and everything comes 1,500 miles via a just-in-time trucking system. I lost friends and family who told me I was crazy to worry about that, but I kept at it. I'm Marjorie Wildcraft. Those of us who know what's going on in the world know you need to become self-reliant before the dollar collapses. I've created a free webinar at gcnfood.com. I can show you, like I've shown hundreds of thousands of people, how to grow lots of food, even if you have no experience, you're older, or you're out of shape. Do it now, before the stores are boarded up and food is not available at any price. Go to gcnfood.com. gcnfood.com.
What if you could cut your heating bills this winter with your existing wood-burning fireplace and not spend thousands doing it? You can with Great Wall of Fire Fireplace Grates. Our U.S.-patented, made-in-America Wall of Fire Grates increase fireplace efficiency, eliminate fireplace smoke problems, and come with a 30-day money-back guarantee. See our grates in action and get free shipping from walloffire.com or call 800-274-7364. Fireplace heat without fireplace smoke. Walloffire.com.
Special history broadcast of the Michael Medved Show. For more history programs, go to MedvedHistoryStore.com or become a Medhead at MichaelMedved.com and check out our new history podcast for premium members called In Light of History.
You're listening. listening to a special broadcast of the Michael Medved Show. It's called Is America a Christian Nation? And whenever anybody dares to suggest that, yes, America is a Christian nation, as this Jewish guy has suggested many times, somebody's going to say, well, what about the First Amendment? We're just talking about the fact that they passed the First Amendment, the first Congress of the United States, and then it was ratified by the states. They passed the First Amendment in order to protect established religion in the states and to prevent favoritism from one religion over the other, but not to somehow ensure that this would be a secular nation. The assumption always was by our founders that this was going to be and was, in fact, a Christian nation. In fact, less than 24 hours after Congress approved the First Amendment, they clearly indicated the way they understood its language. Remember its language about Congress shall make no law respecting establishment of religion? Okay, here's what they did less than 24 hours after passing that amendment. They passed the following resolution. Quote, resolved that a joint committee of both houses be directed to wait upon the President of the United States to request that he would recommend to the people of the United States a day of public thanksgiving and prayer to be observed by acknowledging with grateful hearts the many signal favors of Almighty God, especially by affording them an opportunity peaceably to establish a constitution for their safety and happiness. In the proclamation, duly announcing the day of public thanksgiving and prayer that Congress had requested, President George Washington, who had also been president of the Constitutional Convention, remember, he was president of that convention, he declared November 26th, quote, to be devoted by the people of these states to the service of that great and glorious being, being capitalized, who is the beneficent author of all the good that was, that is, or that will be, end quote. It never even occurred to the first Congress that their call for public prayer would conflict with the amendment they had just adopted a day earlier, prohibiting an establishment of religion. So what about Thomas Jefferson? His name always comes up because it was his letter, which we will get to, that introduced the phrase, a wall of separation between church and state. But even Jefferson, author of that phrase, a wall of separation between church and state, felt generally comfortable with a governmental role in encouraging a faith-based perspective. His fateful 1802 letter to the Danbury Baptist Association that first suggested the wall of separation idea concluded with a distinctly religious phrase. Here it is. Quote, I reciprocate your kind prayers for the protection and blessing of the common father and creator of man. End quote. The presidential letter expressed earnest agreement with Jefferson's Connecticut correspondents, that was the Danbury Baptist Association, that no man ought to suffer in name, person, or effects on account of his religious opinions. That's what religious freedom meant to the founders. It didn't mean that you would be free from ever hearing about religion. The Supreme Court's 1947 ruling in Everson v. Board of Education appropriated the language of Jefferson's letter to justify an unprecedented and restrictive view of governmental entanglement with religion. The court did so despite the fact that the letter from Jefferson, a ceremonial document with no official standing, followed adoption of the First Amendment by some 13 years and emphasized Jefferson's concern with potential government harassment of minority faiths rather than worries over the state's ongoing promotion of religious principles and institutions. In fact, in 1803, the year after his famous separation of church and state letter, Jefferson recommended to Congress the approval of a treaty that provided government funds to support a Catholic priest in ministering to the Kaskaskia Indians. Three times he signed extensions of another measure described as, quote, an act regulating the grants of land appropriated for military services and for the Society of the United Brethren for propagating the gospel among the heathen, end quote. Can you imagine if somebody tried that as a policy toward Native Americans today? But don't try it. Don't try this at home or in Washington. In other words, George W. Bush was hardly the first president to promote the use of governmental resources for faith-based initiatives. Jefferson also paved the way for his successors in his ostentatious participation in church services. Now, remember, he had been attacked during the very fierce election of 1800 for being an atheist and being an unbeliever, and he always insisted, no, he's solid, he's a religious guy. So as president, he participated every week in Christian worship, where? In the Capitol building. In fact, until 1866, the Capitol building, the home of Congress itself, hosted worship every Sunday and intermittently conducted a Sunday school, too. No one challenged these 71 years of Christian prayer at the very seat of federal power, least of all the many living participants in the congressional sessions who had drafted the First Amendment itself. In other words, if the people behind the First Amendment had said, wait a minute, we don't want any governmental entanglement in religion, how come nobody stood up and said, wait, you can't hold Christian services in the Capitol building? Not only did nobody say that, but Thomas Jefferson, certainly among the major founders, the one who was most skeptical about Christianity, and he was, even Thomas Jefferson attended those services and made a point of attending them. Nor did these firsthand witnesses to original intent, particularly the founding fathers like Jefferson and Madison. Madison and Hamilton, of course, both at the Constitutional Convention. Nor did these firsthand witnesses to original intent challenge the seven states that maintained their established churches. In 10 Tortured Words, an invaluable book on the Establishment Clause, Stephen Mansfield writes, "For all of that generation, the understanding was certain that the states were permitted to establish religion or support religion as aggressively as the people allowed. President Jefferson himself explicitly shared that viewpoint, expressed in a public address of March 1805. Quote, "In matters of religion, I have considered that its free exercise is placed by the Constitution independent of the powers of the general government," that means the federal government, "I have therefore undertaken on no occasion to prescribe the religious exercises suited to it, but have left them, as the Constitution found them, under the direction and discipline of state or church authorities acknowledged by the several religious societies." In other words, he declared as president that it was okay to pass up any kind of federal religious establishment. Why? Because that would be taken care of not just by the churches, but by the state authorities themselves. This is a very, very different approach than we have today, where there's an attempt on the local, state, and federal level to purge any kind of governmental favoritism toward religion. But, of course, it hasn't been very successful. Not in a country where the official motto of the country is, "In God We Trust," where we say, "Under God," in the Pledge of Allegiance. If the separationists are right about the First Amendment, how did all this happen? America has always been a Christian nation, in fact, and we'll tell you when that idea became controversial and much more in this special broadcast.
As Dr. Wallach says, we all have nutrient deficiencies in our diets and must supplement with 90 essential nutrients in proper balances. At no cost or obligation, get a personal certified holistic health coach to help you develop a supplement program based on Dr. Wallach's recommendations. Call Linda at 833-VITAL-90. That number to call is 833-848-2590. That's 833-VITAL-90.
G'day, I'm Jamel that works with Dr. Joel Wallach and the GCN team with Youngevity at teamg'day.com. By becoming an associate, you provide income for you and your family on your own hours while working from home. So contact me, Jamel, by filling in the contact box at teamg'day.com and I will get back to you personally and provide all the support you need to get started and build your Youngevity business. Teamg'day.com. Teamg'day.com.
U.S. USA News Update.
It provides for greater accountability over Ukraine aid.
You're listening to House Speaker Mike Johnson as the House passes a $95 billion foreign aid package for Ukraine, Israel, and Taiwan.
It forces an endgame strategy for the Ukraine war. It includes a loan instrument of this foreign aid to Ukraine and the Repo Act to ensure that Russian assets pay for part of the bill.
The Senate expected to vote on this funding on Tuesday, and then the bill heads to President Biden's desk. Now, as for the breakdown of all the money, $61 billion slated for Ukraine, $26 billion heading to Israel, and $8 billion going to Taiwan. Severe weather in North Carolina forcing the Trump campaign to cancel a rally Saturday planned in the town of Wilmington. The former president, who was already in the state, calling into the rally to ask supporters to move out of the area as a severe storm was moving in.
I'm devastated that this could happen.
And I'm Laura Winters, USA News.
People often write to tell us what has happened for them since starting Extendivite. Allow me to read a few. After taking Extendivite for about 6 months, I've noticed improvement on the numbness of my hands and wrists from the carpal tunnel syndrome. I will continue to buy product. This formula is very powerful. I am feeling much better. My heart rate and blood pressure is stabilized. My lower edema has reduced, and lower leg pain due to blood clots has disappeared. This product has relieved what appears to be an angina problem, pain in the chest after climbing stairs and short on breath. I'm quite happy about it. To order, call 1-877-928-8822 or visit extendivite.com. That's extendivite.com.
Extend your life with Extendivite.
Wellness and self-care doesn't have to be complicated. So keep it simple and take good care of yourself with Sunny Bay heating pads. Our heating pads soothe pains in the neck, back, and shoulders while relaxing muscles and increasing blood circulation. Sunny Bay heating pads have always been made in the USA and hand-filled to perfection with the highest quality materials. Sunny Bay heating pads are the perfect wellness gift for loved ones or yourself. See all of our high-quality products at sunny-bay.com, including heated body pads, neck pillows, heated neck and body wraps, and our stress-reducing lavender line. They're all affordable, durable, and in stock now and ready for immediate shipping direct from sunny-bay.com. Read our trusted, authentic, and real reviews at sunny-bay.com or just search for Sunny Bay Heating Pad. To your good health and wellness from Sunny Bay.
Michael Medved Show, a very special broadcast under the heading, Is America a Christian Nation? And one of the historical witnesses often brought up by people on the other side of this debate who say, no, America was founded as a secular nation. They always bring up Thomas Jefferson. And Thomas Jefferson, as we talked about, actually said, I have therefore undertaken on no occasion to prescribe the religious exercise suited to it, but have left them, meaning those religious exercises, that the Constitution found them under the direction and discipline of state or church authorities acknowledged by the several religious societies. In other words, Jefferson recognized, as did everybody of his time period, that the individual states, the individual colonies before that, would have their own religious establishments. That doesn't mean we should have those religious establishments today. But we ought to recognize what the First Amendment really said and what it did not say. And in that spirit, the idea that established churches were okay as long as you didn't try to impose one established church on the whole country, in that spirit, established official churches survived in several states well into the 19th century. In other words, for decades under the Constitution and under the First Amendment. Connecticut disestablished its favored congregational denomination only in 1818, New Hampshire in 1819, and Massachusetts in 1833. That's some 45 years after the adoption of the First Amendment. The changes reflected the religious quickening of the time, viewed by some historians as a second Great Awakening, with new sects and philosophies clamoring for recognition and fresh adherence. In any event, public opinion and legislative decisions, not judicial dictate, brought disestablishment. This was a period when Mormonism came into existence, the whole Adventist church came into existence. There was what people called a second great awakening, where people became more and more religious with more and more religious alternatives. So it made sense for some of these legislatures to say, no, we don't want, even on the state level, one single established church. The leading judges of the early republic outspokenly, however, endorsed governmental support for religious institutions. You've heard of John Marshall. He's considered perhaps the most influential judge in American history. He was the father of American jurisprudence, and he was for 34 hugely important years, 1801 to 1835, he was Chief Justice of the United States. He wrote a revealing letter to Jasper Adams on May 9, 1833, declaring, quote, "The American population is entirely Christian, and with us, Christianity and religion are identified. It would be strange indeed if with such a people, our institutions did not presuppose Christianity and did not often refer to it and exhibit relations with it." Now, Marshall's colleague on the court between 1796 and 1811 was Justice Samuel Chase. He later became wildly controversial. There was an attempt to impeach him, but that's another story. Justice Samuel Chase wrote a 1799 opinion. 1799, just 10 years after the First Amendment. He wrote the 1799 opinion called Runkle versus Winemill that held, quote, "Religion is of general and public concern, and on its support depend in great measure the peace and good order of government, the safety and happiness of the people. By our form of government, the Christian religion is the established religion, and all sects and denominations of Christians are placed upon the same equal footing and are equally entitled to protection in their religious liberty." In other words, Justice Chase was arguing on the Supreme Court that Christianity in general was the established religion, but that the government had no right to prefer one form of Christianity over another. Now, the most authoritative explanation of the First Amendment came from Joseph Story. He was a Supreme Court justice from 1811 to 1845. He was appointed by President Madison, who himself was the father of the Constitution. He was also a longtime Harvard professor. He was the leading early commentator on the Constitution. And even when I attended law school in the 69 to 70, 71, when I attended law school, you still read about Justice Story. He was considered authoritative. And he wrote, "The general, if not universal, sentiment in America was that Christianity ought to receive encouragement from the state so far as was not incompatible with the private rights of conscience and the freedom of religious worship. An attempt to level all religions and to make it a matter of state policy to hold all in utter indifference would have created universal disapprobation, if not universal indignation. The real object of the First Amendment," said Justice Story, "was to exclude all rivalry among Christian sects and to prevent any national ecclesiastical establishment which should give to a hierarchy the exclusive patronage of the national government." So what does that tell us for today? We'll tell you coming back.
To order this show or other history shows, go to MedVidHistoryStore.com.
This is Michael Medved at MichaelMedved.com for Town Hall. Exit polls from the 2020 election show signs of a stronger Republican Party building a broader base. The Trump campaign focused on winning Black, Latino, and Asian votes and, to a surprising extent, succeeded. President Trump's percentage of Black voters rose by 50% compared to 2016, and among Latino males, he scored a competitive 36%. The GOP also saw a surge in Jewish support from 24% to 31%. A rise that played a role in Trump's Florida victory. In another area, Republicans still have work to do. Self-described moderate voters, 40% of the overall electorate, picked Biden over Trump by nearly 2-1. Yes, conservatives are more numerous than liberals, so we can win without outright majorities among the moderates. But Republicans win best as a right-center coalition, and moderate shouldn't be treated as a dirty word. I'm Michael Medved.
What you're hearing in the background there on this very special edition of the Michael Medved Show is called George Washington's March. It was written in 1794. while George Washington was still president of the United States. It was wildly popular and widely played across this country. It's an authentic smash hit from 1794, and another authentic smash hit from 1794 was the Constitution of the United States, which then was 5 years old, and no one at that point of time, the actual government of the Constitution was 5 years old. Of course, the Constitution was older than 7 years prior to that, in 1787. In any event, none of the people who were involved with the Constitution or were close to the constitutional generation, like Justice Joseph Story, ever questioned the idea that the purpose of the First Amendment was not to get rid of religion from public discourse, was not to make sure that no governmental entity, state, federal, local, had anything to do with religion. As Justice Story wrote, and he was a Supreme Court Justice from 1811 to 1845, colleague of Justice Marshall, appointed by President Madison, the father of the Constitution, he wrote, "The real object of the First Amendment was to exclude all rivalry among Christian sects and to prevent any national ecclesiastical establishment which should give to a hierarchy the exclusive patronage of the national government." But as he said, the general sentiment in the United States was that Christianity ought to receive encouragement from the state so far as was not incompatible with the private rights of conscience and the freedom of religious worship. In other words, we were supposed to be protected from government interfering with personal religious expression, but not protected from government encouraging, and he uses that word, encouragement, religion.
The Michael Medved Show.
This is Michael Medved at michaelmedved.com for Town Hall. Despite possible disappointment in the outcome of the presidential race, Republicans can find reasons for encouragement in the election returns of November 3rd. GOP congressional candidates performed far better than expected, making significant gains in the House and holding their own in Senate contests. These victories have set up the strong likelihood that Mitch McConnell, himself handily reelected, will maintain the GOP's crucial Senate majority. This means that the more radical, alarming elements of the Democratic agenda can be blocked in the upper house. No court packing, no Green New Deal, no automatic statehood for D.C. or Puerto Rico, no confiscatory tax increases. The founders, who provided for a system of checks and balances to prevent too much concentrated power in the hands of a single faction, would be pleased to see that even if a Democrat ultimately wins the White House, the tradition of divided government will endure.
Why be held back by pain and difficulty and soreness and stiffness when Relief Factor is available and available so readily? You have nothing to lose but your pain and the whole world to gain. This is 1995 for a 3-week quick start, which can reduce the inflammation, it can reduce the pain, it can reduce the soreness and stiffness and make you feel better. Go to michaelmedved.com, click on the banner for Relief Factor, michaelmedved.com, find the banner for Relief Factor. If you're troubled by Washington moving toward more government control, income taxes, rent control, and centralized decision-making, now is the time for you to take action. At Washington Policy Center, we want free market reforms that make Washington the best place to raise a family, to get a job, or to start a business. WPC is nationally renowned for its effectiveness in an ideologically hostile state. Get off the sidelines. Become a member today at WashingtonPolicy.org. That's WashingtonPolicy.org. Instability, vulnerability, uncertainty, volatility, precarious, unpredictable. Now, all of those words describe our banking system right now, as evidenced by the recent collapse of major banks. Michael Medved here for Amfed Coin and Bullion. This was the second largest bank failure in history, and the Federal Reserve has been scrambling to keep this bank run from spreading. Now, if you feel uneasy about having too much money sitting in the bank, you're not alone. Gold, silver, and platinum have had recent gains as investors look for safe places to park their money. Now more than ever, you need to call my good friends Nick Grovich and Company, owner of Amfed Coin and Bullion. I've been doing business with Nick for many years, and I wouldn't go anywhere else. Nick and his team of specialists will provide you with personalized attention, honest information, and sound advice. If you're interested in buying or selling, call Amfed Coin and Bullion, 800-221-7694, 800-221-7694, AmericanFederal.com.
It's happening daily. We're being conned by the institutions we used to trust. The mainstream media is distracting us with meaningless headlines instead of focusing on the harsh realities facing American families. Time is short before something big happens, and that's why so many folks are preparing. They're becoming self-reliant by investing in emergency food storage from My Patriot Supply. Go to MyPatriotSupply.com and secure 4-week emergency food kits for each member of your family. Each kit contains tasty breakfasts, lunches, and dinners, averaging over 2,000 calories per day. Save $50 on each 4-week food kit you purchase. Plus, get free shipping on Ready Hour 4-week emergency food kits. You're not ready if it's not Ready Hour foods. At My Patriot Supply, you can also get solar power generators, water filtration units, heirloom seeds, and survival gear. Order by 3 p.m. and your unmarked boxes ship the same day. Shop MyPatriotSupply.com today. MyPatriotSupply.com.
If you're concerned about the power grid and want to generate your own supply of off-grid electricity, this will be the most important message you'll hear this year. Here's why. We now have a small number of solar generators back in stock. These emergency backup systems provide life-saving backup power when you need it most. And unlike gas generators, solar generators run quietly, emit no dangerous fumes, and produce an endless supply of free electricity from the sun. Whether it's wildfires, dangerous weather, power grid issues, or just getting off the grid, you'll never have to suffer through painful power outages again. Even better, all this week, radio listeners get over $700 in free off-the-grid bonuses, too. Go to MySolarBackup.com to learn more and check availability. That's MySolarBackup.com. Look for the free report, Crisis Cooling, how to make absolutely sure your meat, milk, and medicines stay safe and cool in any power outage. Yours free at MySolarBackup.com.
The Michael Medved Show.
Now, it's fascinating because you go back to Joseph's story. Today, the Christian right, which is supposedly such a huge danger, the Christian conservative organizations today don't seek to institute the national ecclesiastical establishment that is, in fact, prohibited by the Establishment Clause. The leading organizations on the religious right focus on the family, the Christian Coalition, the American Family Association, the American Family Council, the Traditional Values Coalition, and so forth. They all represent interdenominational coalitions, drawing Catholics and Mormons, Episcopalians, and evangelicals of every sort. Meanwhile, those who worry over Christian conservative influence clearly favor the folly described by Justice Story as a state policy to hold all religions in utter indifference. Yeah, he thought that would be folly, to hold all religions in utter indifference. This effort to sever ties between faith and state, including the absurd efforts to remove the words "under God" from the Pledge of Allegiance or the motto "In God We Trust" from our coinage, those policies, those efforts, produce precisely the sort of universal indignation today that Justice Story predicted nearly 200 years ago. So how did we end up with this motto, "In God We Trust"? That's a fascinating story. During the darkest years, not of the American Revolution, but of the war between the states, the Civil War, Christians appealed to the Treasury Department to place the word "God" on our coins. In one typical letter, the Reverend M.L. Watkinson of Ridley Township, Pennsylvania, worried that antiquaries of succeeding generations would sort through the relics of 1860s America and then assume that its citizens lived in a godless society. If, however, the nation invoked the Almighty on its coinage, it would, quote, "relieve us from the ignominy of heathenism." Now, the director of the Mint suggested the words "our God, our country," or "God, comma, our trust." But it was a Secretary of the Treasury and later Chief Justice of the Supreme Court, Salmon Portland Chase, who came up with the alternative, "In God We Trust." This choice echoed the concluding verse of the Star-Spangled Banner, "And this be our motto, in God is our trust." Yeah, that's in the last verse of the Star-Spangled Banner, the national anthem. Coins continue to carry these words, despite strong disapproval from President Theodore Roosevelt. He was a devout Christian who in 1907 wrote, "It seems to me eminently unwise to cheapen such a motto by use on coins, just as it would be to cheapen it by use on postage stamps or in advertisements." He probably said advertisements.
Despite such objections, the words remained a cherished tradition on our coins and later on our paper money and became the official national motto by an act of Congress on July 30, 1956. In the same era, the legislators added the phrase "under God" to the Pledge of Allegiance, hoping to overcome, quote, imperialistic and materialistic communism and to, quote, remind all of us of this self-evident truth that as long as this country trusts in God, it will prevail. Where did the phrase "under God" come from? It came from the Gettysburg Address, of course. That this nation, under God, will have a new birth of freedom? Okay, that's Lincoln's phrase. So much for the idea that all of our great presidents have been agnostics, atheists, deists, somehow reluctant to talk about God. The next section comes under the heading "Struggling for Faith, Not Celebrating Doubt." Advocates of strict separation find so little support from the founders of our country in state papers or in their legal opinions, they often turn to intimate examinations of the personal faith or lack of faith of the extraordinary individuals who launched this republic. Now, Jefferson and Franklin in particular never embraced the conventional Christian faith of their day, and they spent their long lives probing and arguing, they both had long lives, over the nature of God and the meaning of the Bible. Their well-known explorations have led to false assumptions and misleading statements about the founders in general, such as the widely repeated lie that they counted as deists, not Christians. Okay, deists, according to the standard definition from Webster's New World Dictionary, believe that, quote, God exists and created the world, but thereafter assumed no control of it or the lives of people. But the founders, very much including Jefferson and Franklin, almost obsessively cited God's unceasing control of the world and of the great events in which they participated. The revolutionary generation regularly searched for a supernatural hand in their affairs, and they made every effort to discern the divine will. In a famous letter to his friend Thomas Jefferson on July 20, 1776, a patriot named John Page observed, "We know the race is not to the swift, nor the battle to the strong. Do you think that an angel rides in the whirlwind and directs this storm?" Yeah, they're looking for God's hand in human affairs. We'll be back with more on Is America a Christian Nation?
Hey, this is Rockstar Greg with the Michael Medved Show. Thanks for listening to the special history broadcast. If you want even more content from Michael Medved, go to our website, michaelmedved.com, and consider becoming a Medhead. It's $5 a month for a year subscription, and there's so much content available. The 3-hour daily broadcast, commercial-free, hundreds of commentaries, 2 new podcasts, private chats with Michael, and lots more. It's all at michaelmedved.com. Click on the Medhead subscription and become a member. Thanks for listening in this greatest nation on God's green earth.
You're listening to a special broadcast of the Michael Medved Show, addressing the question, is America a Christian nation? If you want a CD version or a download of this particular broadcast, you should call Tree Farm Communications. They'll make it available to you, 1-800-468-0464. That's also the source for any of our other special history broadcasts on the Medved Show. And I should also say that a great deal of this material, not all of it, but most of it, is based upon my best-selling book from 2008-2009, The 10 Big Lies About America. That's also available to you if you want that book with all of the sources in it. If you want that book, it's available from our website at michaelmedved.com. With people asking each other, is it possible, do you think not, that an angel rides in the whirlwind and directs this storm? Obviously, these folks were not deists in the sense of believing that God didn't involve himself in human affairs. For instance, the father of our country, George Washington, arguably his most important speech ever, his first inaugural address. Imagine how important this is. We're starting a new nation now under a new constitution, and he is giving the first inaugural address. And in that address, Washington declared as his first official act, and those were his words, his, quote, fervent supplications to that almighty being who rules over the universe. that he might bless the new government. Washington went on to reflect that no people can be bound to acknowledge and adore the invisible hand which conducts the affairs of men more than those of the United States. In other words, the first president, in his first official act under the Constitution, explicitly rejected the deist idea that God plays no constant or present role in our affairs. Can we then stop with the stupidity that these people were deists? The editor of Newsweek, John Meacham, he's a big liberal, but he's a good writer. He's the author of American Gospel, God and the Founding Fathers and the Making of the Nation. He notes that even the most religiously adventurous of the framers resorted to scriptural imagery when suggesting a national seal to the Continental Congress on the fateful day of July 4, 1776. Quote, Franklin's vision was biblical, as was Jefferson's, he writes. Franklin wanted an image along these lines. Moses standing on the shore and extending his hand over the sea, thereby causing the same to overwhelm Pharaoh, who was sitting in an open chariot, a crown on his head and a sword in his hand. Rays from the pillar of fire in the clouds reaching to Moses to express that he acts by command of the deity. Motto, rebellion to tyrants as obedience to God. That was Benjamin Franklin, alleged deist, his idea for a national seal. Was America ever one specific Christian denomination? No, that's prohibited by the First Amendment. But there should be no doubt, and there can be no reasonable doubt, to the answer, is this a Christian nation, this greatest nation on God's green earth?
This is Michael Medved at MichaelMedved.com for Town Hall. In the midst of all the sound and fury of the campaign, you may not have noticed that Democrats have entirely abandoned one of their favorite issues of the past two decades. In 2020, you hear nothing about campaign finance reform or longstanding liberal hopes of limiting citizens and companies in supporting their favorite causes. As recently as 2012, Obama, Hillary, and other prominent liberals spoke of amending the Constitution to strike down the Citizens United case that made it easier for corporations to participate in ongoing public debates. Why have Democrats dropped that point of view? Because Joe Biden has uncorked a gusher of money, breaking all records, outspending Trump by more than 3-1 on TV ads in key swing states. 4 years ago, Hillary also outspent Trump, but lost the election. Biden's runaway spending should strip Democrats of any ongoing ability to attack their opponents for trying to buy.
Hey, want to feel young again? Are you tired, run down, have aches and pains, brain fog? This is science-based, not hype or fancy marketing. It really works. Carbon 60 helps detoxify your body on the cellular level. It stabilizes free radicals, just like the antioxidants found in red wine and berries do, but on a far smaller, more bioavailable nanoscale. It's like a bottle of electrons, helping your body to function better. You can also apply it on your skin, topically, over muscles, joints, or organs. Most people feel results within minutes. This is not a drug. It's organic carbon. Feel better today. About 95% of our users report more energy and clarity of mind within 10 days. Give us a call at Gruska's Carbon 60 at 720-600-6040 or visit our site at c-60.com. Call 720-600-6040 and feel young again.
Let me tell you a story about Bill. Bill was a normal guy in his 50s. He had back surgery about 2 years ago. Bill was in a lot of pain. He dealt with his pain by taking the Percocets his doctor prescribed for him. Bill took more and more and more of them to help with the pain, until one day the prescriptions weren't enough to get rid of Bill's pain. Then one day Bill found someone to help him get rid of the pain with illegal drugs he didn't need a prescription for. Fast forward to today. Bill lost his job and his family. The only thing he does have is his drug dealer. If you know Bill's story and you don't want to end up like Bill, call the Detox and Treatment Helpline right now to get away and get treatment.
800-296-1327. 800-296-1327. 800-296-1327. Call right now. Help is standing by. 800-296-1327.